Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. We love to do these weird questions shows with Jimmy Akin. And what's a better day of the year than? I can't think of a single day of the year better to do weird questions on than Halloween. So as a little bit of a Halloween celebration, we're doing weird questions with Jimmy Akin. Jimmy Akin, of course, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and the proprietor of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, where this Friday's show will be about one of the most convincing extraterrestrial encounters ever reported. Is that a fair way to say it?
That's how many people would say it.
Yeah. A police officer reporting seeing a UFO on the ground
in New Mexico. With confirming physical evidence.
So, you know you love Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Check it out on Friday. Actually, every Friday. Plus hundreds of past episodes that you can enjoy at your leisure. I'm not giving out the number today because all of our questions have already been submitted. Folks have people love to submit weird questions to Jimmy, and so we've got a ton of them. And this one comes from Drew, who gets something right here that most of us get wrong most of the time, right in the first sentence. My question involves a Frankenstein's monster scenario. He didn't say Frankenstein. Most people call the monster Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And which may be the case. I mean, maybe if you make a monster, it gets your name.
It certainly can.
Yeah.
If people want to call it that, then fine.
So my question involves a Frankenstein's monster scenario. Let's suppose that the monster's body was created as provided in the original novel.
Okay.
Let's also suppose that the body parts were all gathered from baptized persons.
Not unreasonable, given the cultural context.
After coming to life, would the monster need to be baptized in order to have the stain of original sin removed?
Okay, so baptism makes a change in the soul of a person. And if you're ever baptized, you don't need to ever, in fact, you cannot be rebaptized. It's not possible because baptism makes a permanent mark on your soul. So the real question is, would Frankenstein's monster have inherited the soul from any of the people whose body parts went into making his body? Now, ordinarily, we do transfusions today. We take one person's blood and put it in another person. We also take people's organs and transfer them. We transplant organs from one person to another. And actually, there, believe it or not, there are reports of people who have received transplants inheriting memories from the people from whom the organs came. Yeah. So that's a reported phenomenon. But it doesn't involve the transfer of the rational soul. It's the rational soul that is the overall form of the body. And that's what baptism applies to. So is there any body part that has a special relationship with the overall rational soul? The word reason may be a clue there, because the faculty of reason in human beings is associated with our central nervous system and specifically our brain. And so you could propose that by transplanting the brain of a baptized person and then reanimating the brain, that it's really the same person. All you've really done is a brain transplant, and with the brain temporarily being offline. Now you'd have to do it very quickly because of brain damage, but the longer a brain stays without oxygen from blood, the more damage is done, the more it breaks down. But hypothetically, you could propose that, okay, really all we've done here is a brain transplant. And if you do a brain transplant and you've revived the person from cardiac arrest and they're having their normal mental function or even part of their normal mental function, you could say, yeah, this is the same person. And so if that person was baptized before you transplanted their brain, then you would not need to baptize them again. On the other hand, if the death is a complete death, then it would, which would have to go beyond just cardiac arrest. But if the brain has really totally died, then, well, really, there wouldn't be a way to revive it. Or at least arguably there wouldn't. But if you don't have the soul of the original person transferring with the brain, then Frankenstein's monster would be a new person. He would have a new soul because he is alive. And that means he's got a soul. And if he is a rational being, even, you know, even if he's brain damaged, if he's a rational being, then he's got a rational soul, and he would not have inherited sanctifying grace from the body parts he was made of. So he would be in the same condition as a newborn child and thus would need to be baptized.
All right. Thank you very much for the Frankenstein's monster question. Let's see, where am I here? By the way, it's Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin today for Halloween, if you're just joining us. Hope you're having a happy Halloween. And I think we'll go to Edwin's question. Edwin has a series of questions that seem quite specific to his house. Edwin asks, why do things fly off the shelves by themselves? Why do we hear heavy footsteps on our ceiling when we only have a one-story house? Why do our cats avoid a certain spot in the living room and spend hours alertly watching it?
Okay, so we have a number of phenomena being reported here. And as always, the first thing you do is make a list of possible natural explanations and consider them. Why do things fly off the shelf by themselves? Could the shelves be tilted? Could you be living in an area that has earthquakes? Could there be some mechanical system in your house that causes vibrations and causes the objects to vibrate to the edge and then fall off of the shelf? So those would be things you'd want to consider. Why might one hear heavy footsteps on a ceiling in a one-story house? Well, maybe it is the sound of wood adjusting to temperature changes. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you've got a burglar or someone else up on your roof or in your attic, or maybe it's an animal, because people do get animals in their attics, you know, and sometimes sizable ones like possums. I know of cases where haunted houses have been investigated and it turns out it was a possum in the attic. So they can make noises, they can knock stuff over, it could even sound like footsteps. Why do cats avoid a certain spot in the living room and spend hours alertly watching it? Well, because they're cats.
The real question is, why do you have cats, Edwin? Sorry, that was rude. I apologize, Edwin.
So those would be some natural explanations, but if those things aren't true, then there could be something more going on here. In terms of things flying off shelves, now that's classified as poltergeist activity, and poltergeists can, at least this is the claim, they can be caused by spirits, so like a ghost. I mean, that's what poltergeist means in German. Poltern means noisy or rattling, and geist means ghost. So a poltergeist etymologically is a noisy ghost. And there have been reports of spirits that, you know, cause disturbances like things coming off of shelves and smashing into other things. That actually, though, is not the major theory these days of what poltergeists are. It is thought by many parapsychologists that spirits can and sometimes do produce poltergeist activity, but it is more commonly understood that the poltergeist is the manifestation of a living person, and that what's happening is a living person, without realizing it, has stress and frustrations that they're dealing with, and it causes a natural psychokinetic ability to activate and act itself out as a way of dealing with the frustrations that they're experiencing. And so the reason that the theory ended up being proposed is because there usually seems to be a single person who is at the scene of the poltergeist activity who is under a lot of stress, and frequently as a young person, because, you know, being a young person can be a very stressful time of life, and the activity seems to center on that person, but they've eliminated the possibility that the person is causing it normally. And so the proposal was, well, then it is this person who's causing it, but they're causing it paranormally. And so poltergeist activity is commonly believed, at least in the majority of cases these days, to be the result of a living agent, a living person who is dealing with stress, and it's causing a latent psychokinetic ability to manifest in a kind of uncontrolled way. The same thing actually could be responsible for hearing footsteps on the ceiling. That's another way that psychokinetic or mind over matter abilities could manifest. And in terms of cats staring at a certain place, well, A, cats, and B, you know, there could be some unseen presence. I mean, sometimes ghosts are associated with poltergeists, and the cats could be picking up on something that's not presumably mentally picking up on it, but they could be picking up on something that's not visible to human senses, and it could be paranormal, though knowing cats, it also could just be normal.
Edwin, thank you very much. I'm sure your cats are lovely. It's time to take a break. However, we will be right back with more weird Halloween questions for Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
We should pray because prayer is conversation with God, and conversation is the only way to build a relationship. We need that relationship with God. We should pray and talk with God about what's on our hearts, what's on our minds, what's active in our lives, the joys we have. We should share all of these with God. Prayer is conversation, and conversation is the only way to build a relationship with God. It's the most important relationship. All of our other relationships depend on this one.
Welcome back to a very special Halloween episode of Catholic Answers Live. It's Weird Questions for Jimmy Akin, a show we do somewhat regularly here on when we have the opportunity here on Catholic Answers, and we have particular fun with it at certain times of the year, one of them being Halloween. These are almost all questions having to do with monsters, ghosts, vampires, and the like. So it's Weird Halloween Questions for Jimmy Akin. Jimmy, this one comes from Kelly.
Okay.
Kelly says, I believe in ghosts or whatever it is that we call ghosts because my daughter has seen them when she was younger and scared us all. What did she see? If ghosts are real, what are they? Why would someone be able to see them?
Okay, so I guess there are a couple of ways to approach this. The first one is, in terms of what your daughter saw, well, I don't know because I haven't investigated the case, and so I haven't, you know, looked at the alternative natural explanations for what she might have seen. There are natural explanations for a lot of ghost reports. You know, sometimes when you hear a knocking, it's just an air bubble in the water pipes. Or sometimes when you hear, when you think you see something, well, it might be in low lighting conditions, and it could be, you know, a floater, or it could be an illusion caused by the darkness, or any number of other things. So I don't know in your daughter's case, but if you eliminate the natural explanations, then what a ghost would be a departed human spirit. And departed human spirits are real. And historically, the Christian faith has recognized that departed human spirits can interact with the living, and not just the saints. I mean, we're familiar with things like Fatima, where the Virgin Mary appeared to children, and other saints have appeared to people. But it's not restricted to that, at least according to classic theologians like Thomas Aquinas. Thomas Aquinas was of the opinion that not only can saints appear to people, but so can souls in purgatory. And so can even the damned, if God wants to allow a damned soul to appear. But that's basically what a ghost would be. It would be a departed human spirit that is in some way manifesting. There is an additional... and also I should say, I was going to mention, this is something that has not been controversial. The appearance of ghosts has not been controversial in Catholic circles throughout Catholic history. The idea that ghosts, that departed human spirits don't appear, is an idea that was introduced with the Protestant Reformation. And if you study the history of ghostology, you find that, okay, before the Reformation, everybody is on board in the Christian world with ghosts appearing, and there are regular accounts of it, and, you know, people can study them and so forth. But then along comes the Protestant Reformation. Protestants don't like the idea of praying to the saints. They don't want us to have any contact with the saints. They don't like the concept of purgatory. They don't want purgatorial souls manifesting and asking for prayers. And so come the Protestant Reformation, in Protestant circles, this does not happen. We don't have private revelations because we want sola scriptura. We don't have purgatorial ghosts, so we don't have the saints appearing. We don't want purgatorial ghosts appearing and asking for prayers because we don't like purgatory. And that means the only thing that could ever appear would be a demon.
Oh, and, I see. I hadn't thought about the logic of that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And even then, they don't want to say too many demons are appearing. So the Protestantism became very dismissive of the idea of ghosts, even though it had been a historical part of Christian culture and Jewish culture. You look in the Gospels, when the disciples see Jesus walking on the water, they think it's a ghost. You know, and he shows he's not. And then when they see him resurrected, they think it's a ghost. And he says, you know, handle me, feel me. A ghost, a spirit, has not flesh and bones as you can see that I have. He doesn't say, guys, there's no such thing as ghosts.
Yeah, right.
He
right.
says, ghosts don't have flesh and bones, and I do, so I'm not a ghost. So this is actually part of the biblical worldview. But in Protestant circles, it got dissed. And since we're living in a majority Protestant culture historically, you have a lot of anti-ghost rhetoric in our culture, you know. But really, I do believe in spooks. I do believe in spooks. I do believe in spooks. And so that's what they would be. Now, in terms of there, I should mention there's another thing, though, that is paranormal, that is reported as an explanation for some ghostly phenomena. Now, if you can interact with, and in parapsychology, if you interact with a ghost, if it's capable of like having a conversation or leaving messages or things like that, then that's a good indication you've got a conscious spirit there. But a lot of reported ghost encounters don't have that. Mm-hmm. You'll just see like a woman walk down a staircase. And she'll do it repeatedly, but that's all she ever does. She just walks down this staircase and vanishes. Or you'll see someone sitting in a chair and rocking back and forth, and that's all they ever do. And if you try talking to them, they don't respond. It's like you're watching a recording. And so what's happened in contemporary parapsychology is these repetitive, non-interacting phenomena that don't display consciousness and seem to just be recordings. The proposal is, well, that's what they are. This isn't a conscious human spirit. It's a recording of some kind that was laid down by a living person. Like maybe this was a very special place to them, and there's a kind of residue that they left behind and that you're picking up on now. And that's why all they do is the same thing over and over again, and they don't really vary that routine, because you're essentially watching a kind of, like, it's like a videotape playing out, just like if you rented, let's say, a movie like Top Hat from, I think, 1931 with Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. You can watch Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers dancing, but they're going to do the same dance every time you watch it. And they laid down that recording when they were alive. And so, and it's just, you're just watching it again now. And so the proposal is that some of what people perceive as ghosts, if it's non-interactive, it's probably just a recording. It's a place memory. that the person that somebody laid down when they were alive. So that's the other thing besides the human spirit that a person might perceive. How would someone perceive a ghost? Well, really good question. And I wish that people on ghost hunting shows, of which there are quite a number, would ask themselves this question, because you'll see people in the ghost industry. This is not real parapsychology. This is like a media phenomenon. But they will have gadgets like electromagnetic field detectors and other gizmos that they will claim will detect ghosts. Ghosts are not electromagnetic phenomena. If they were, we would be able to detect them regularly. We'd be able to detect them leaving people's bodies when they die. There would be electromagnetic energy that would leave the person's body, and we could watch it.
Good point.
And so these devices are not themselves intrinsically capable of picking up a ghost, and you're misleading your viewers when you pretend that they are. I'm not saying ghosts couldn't influence the devices, but that's different than saying the device can just detect them.
Yeah.
Also, there's scams in this. I'm aware of a alleged ghost detector that's really a cat toy that has been rebranded and sold as a ghost detector when it's just a little ball.
Again.
Yeah.
They're
it's
messing
a little
with
ball.
Us.
Little ball for cats to play with, and it lights up. Well, it gets sold as a ghost detector. And a lot of the junk you see on Amazon is like that. But how would someone really perceive a ghost or a haunting? Because that's what the recording is called. It's called a haunting if it's a recording. Well, mentally. So this would be some kind of telepathy. It would be a form of mind-to-mind contact in the case of an apparition where you're talking to a departed human spirit. They don't have a voice. They're not literally moving the air. So this would be some kind of mind-to-mind contact, just like angels have with each other. I mean, angels can communicate with each other, but they don't have lips. You know, they don't use matter as an intermediary instrument to transmit sound waves. So angels speak mind to mind, and presumably human souls, if you know, we're going to be able to talk to angels in the afterlife, for example, or talk to other human souls even when we don't have a body. So this is probably, and historically, medieval theologians did view this as a native faculty of the human soul. It would be some kind of mental perception. It may not be distinguishable from a physical perception. It may be vivid enough that you don't recognize this is just happening in my mind. And there are lots of reports where people see a ghost and don't realize it's a ghost until it, say, vanishes all of a sudden. So you could have, at least according to the literature, you could have a fully realistic impression of a ghost and think it's coming through your physical eyes, but it's really a mental perception, either transmitted by the ghost or your own abilities. And that also, your own abilities potentially would allow you to pick up on a recording and see a haunting. So it would be some kind of mental perception. But I hope that's a helpful answer.
Kelly, thank you very much for that series of questions. Most of the questions have been kind of theoretical today, mm-hmm. and I appreciate occasionally getting a good practical question in. And I know that I appreciate Mr. Michael, who sent the following question, which is just practical. It's about something you really need to know. And I am looking forward to finding out the answer to it. If you lean too close when you're blowing out your jack-o'-lantern, can the pumpkin suck out your soul? And see, this is the kind of stuff, this is not just like, oh, pie in the sky. This is stuff that mm-hmm. if I know the answer to this is going to be helpful mm-hmm. to me. So thank you, Mr. Michael.
Yeah, so the jack-o'-lantern itself, the pumpkin cannot suck out your soul. The pumpkin is a vegetable.
There you go.
And vegetables don't have the ability to suck souls, except perhaps in Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Another Halloween-themed
there
movie.
You go.
But you can burn your hair if you get too close, so don't get too close.
But cats can suck out your soul. Am I wrong about that?
There is evidence to that effect.
Okay, very good. Mr. Michael, thank you very much for finally asking a practical question. Jimmy Akin is our guest. All of the questions are... Go ahead. You want to say something?
Well, actually, I was going to say for people who may not be aware, that thing about cats stealing your soul or taking your soul or sucking your soul, that's based on a real phenomenon because you had a sudden infant death syndrome. And in the past, people would think the cat has stolen the baby's breath.
Oh, because cats love to smell baby's breath. I mean, it's very sweet to them.
And babies are warm, and they want to sit on them and be around them, and they don't move a whole lot. And so the cat's around the baby accidentally dies.
Oh!
Correlation equals causation. It's the cat that did it.
All right, now I feel bad for the cats. They've been blamed, and it wasn't even their fault. And it's not the jack-o'-lantern's fault. We'll be right back with more weird Halloween questions for Jimmy Akin, and some stuff that's really useful that could be helpful to you right after this, Catholic Answers Live.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Welcome back to this Halloween edition of Catholic Answers Live. Once again, I think sometimes they move the holy days, but you can't move the feast of All Saints Day, right? So
it's an immovable feast.
Immovable feast, does everyone everywhere have to go to Mass, or is it one of those feasts where
it depends on the area you're in. Oh. I mean, for a start, the holy days of obligation of the Latin Rite apply only to the Latin Rite.
Oh, yeah.
And even within the Latin Rite, the Vatican gave the local bishops' conferences the ability to add or suppress or move different days. And so it's a decision that's made by each bishops' conference, or at times, I mean, in a given year, like if November 1st falls on a Saturday or a Monday,
yeah,
the local bishop might dispense with it.
I see.
Or the national conference might. But in some countries, they've got two holy days of obligation, like Canada. Two.
All Saints and All Souls?
No.
Oh.
Christmas and Nativity of Mary.
Oh, I see. Two in total for the whole year.
Whole year. Yeah. And they when the Vatican did this, they kind of in a back channel said, we want Christmas. So Christmas is, we want you to keep Christmas, and we want you to keep one of the Marian ones. And it's, so in some countries, it's like just December 25th and January 1st.
Oh, I had no idea. I'm glad I asked you that. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, next Halloween weird question. This comes from Frank. And this is from his own experience. Frank says, I know someone who died, and he was very possibly in mortal sin. His wife died a few years earlier. She was a good, faithful Catholic. He spoke to two different relatives probably within an hour after he had just passed, and he revealed to them that he was not in the same place as his wife. He said that he could not see her. Both relatives didn't even know he had passed away. He spoke to them in their dreams with the same message. How does that happen?
Okay, so this is another instance of what's known as a crisis apparition, where a person who is in a crisis, sometimes a fatal one, appears either just before or during or just after the crisis to other people, usually people they know, like relatives. And so at least based on the way this experience presents itself, this gentleman died. That put him in crisis. And shortly after his physical death, he then appeared to these two relatives in their dreams within an hour of this happening. Now, of course, as with anything, I'd have to check it out. But assuming all that's true, I would say, well, this is a credible experience. If you have two relatives who don't know that someone is dead, and they, on the same night, report dreams of this person at the time the person died, even though they didn't know the person was dying, and if they report the same message, like, I'm not seeing my wife here in the afterlife, I would say that's a pretty striking experience. Assuming that's all true, that's quite significant. So what might we explain, how might we explain him not seeing his wife? Well, I think the explanation that Frank is wondering about is, does that mean he's in hell and his wife is in heaven? Because he said the wife was a good, faithful Catholic and the husband was very possibly in mortal sin. So maybe he went to hell, maybe she went to heaven. Well, that's a possibility. I can't rule that out. On the other hand, I see other possibilities as well. While Thomas Aquinas was of the opinion that God could allow the damned to appear to the living, it was only like for a special reason, like to scare them back onto the straight and narrow or something like that, you know, a warning of what could happen. But at least based on what you've said here, it doesn't particularly sound like that. And so I would be inclined to explore a couple of additional possibilities for where this gentleman might be and why he couldn't see his wife. One is maybe she's in heaven and he's in purgatory, and that's why he doesn't see her. Or the afterlife's a big place. I mean, if I go to a shopping mall, like suppose I'm married, and I go to a shopping mall where I know my wife is, the minute I walk into the shopping mall, that doesn't mean I'm guaranteed to see my wife. She could be mixed in the crowd or in another store, or another part. She could be in the food court, and I could be in Dillard's or who knows what. So as Jesus says, there are many mansions in my Father's house, and we're not guaranteed to see our loved ones the instant we get there. So that might have been part of his experience as well. He was looking forward to seeing his wife. He gets there, he doesn't see her immediately. It's of concern to him or something, but he at least reports it to living relatives in their dreams.
Frank, thank you very much. I hope that was helpful to you. We continue with more weird questions for the holiday. It's kind of a holiday for
it is a holiday.
Yeah, for I was just thinking you don't really get the day off for it, which you should. I mean, I'm all in favor. More days off. You know me. I'm always advocating more days off. But so it's weird questions for Halloween, and this one comes from Thomas. Is Father Amorth fake and or just a product of the satanic panic? If he is fake, is he sincere in his beliefs, or is he some type of satanic panic grifter like Mike Warnke and Zachary King? I just want to say I don't know these people, so this is the question. Mm-hmm. In the case of Father Amorth, I still believe in exorcism, but Father Amorth's claims and documentaries make me think that he is not a good exorcist.
So Father Gabriel Amorth was an exorcist of the Diocese of Rome, and he was a big self-promoter. and he wrote a number of books and did a lot of interviews and things like that. And he got billed by a lot of people as the Vatican's chief exorcist, which is not true. The Vatican does not have a chief exorcist. He did not work at the Vatican. He was a priest of the Diocese of Rome, and he was also an exorcist, but he gets billed as, you know, the head exorcist over there. He has a gift for self-promotion. I'll give him that. He also made a lot of claims that are really problematic. He claimed to have performed tens and even over 100,000 exorcisms in remarkably short spaces of time in ways that wouldn't seem to comply with the usual approval process required for exorcisms. He also said other things like all Nazis were possessed. Okay, well, that's just not true. All Nazis were not possessed. So I would be very cautious around claims made by Father Amorth. He's no longer living. I don't have reason to put him in the same category as someone like Mike Warnke, who was an alleged satanic high priest that emerged and kind of had a ministry to evangelicals, but who has been proven to be a fraud. So I don't have evidence that Father Amorth was a fraud, but I do have evidence that Father Amorth made a lot of really sketchy claims, and people should not simply take whatever he says at face value. They need to be quite cautious. And if you'd like more information on that, the canon lawyer Edward N. Peters wrote a review of one of Father Amorth's books, and hopefully we can have a link to it. But if you Google Edward Peters and Gabriel Amorth, the review should come up.
Thanks very much, Thomas, for that question. Let's see. We'll go to Adam's question now. Could a gateway to hell exist, such as the legend of Stull, Kansas?
So I'm not familiar with the legend of Stull, Kansas, but in terms of could a gateway to hell exist, it's going to depend on what you mean. Hell is a non-physical realm, and thus you can't literally have a gateway to something that's not a place. You know, gateways connect two different places, and if one of the places is not a place, if it's not a physical place, and you couldn't have a physical gateway to that place. On the other hand, if you just mean, could there be an area where there's a lot of activity by inhabitants of hell, like demons or damned souls? Well, sure, that can happen. If you have a house, for example, that has been, the technical term for it is not possession, but infestation. You could have a house that is infested with demons, hypothetically damned souls also. And so you could have a place that's infested with people from hell, and if you wanted to call that infested place a gateway, you could call it that. So I could see that happening. It also then would be possible to get rid of the gateway by doing the appropriate exorcistic rituals and getting rid of the problematic folks there.
Adam, great question. Thank you. If there's going to be a gateway to hell, Kansas would shock me as the location, but yeah, you never know about these things.
Also hear about a highway to hell, but I think that's different.
I have heard about that. We're going to take the highway to a break right now. We'll be right back with more Weird Questions for Halloween with Jimmy Akin.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I told him about the woman who came to me and said her two children hadn't spoken to each other for 2 years. Their grandma died and she was very wealthy. She left half to each one. She said they're arguing over a commode. She said it's inlaid. Can you imagine being in hell and somebody saying to you, what are you here for?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. For Halloween, we're doing Weird Questions with Jimmy Akin, which is the best thing you can do for Halloween. So, well, other than get free candy. I mean, I'm sorry, Jimmy. Love doing the show with you, but free candy.
Okay, goodbye.
Wait, no. I need you for at least 20 more minutes.
Do I get free candy then?
I would be happy to give you free candy if you'll stay 20 more minutes. Yes, absolutely. Darren. Buy some free candy for Jimmy. Oh, Darren's on it. Very good. Mandy asks this. My daughter Lauren would like to know the history of the tradition of carving pumpkins and if it had any connection to the Catholic All Hallows Eve.
Yes, it does have a connection to All Hallows Eve, and it was a custom that developed in Gaelic circles, so think like Ireland and Scotland. Now, they didn't have pumpkins in Ireland and Scotland. They did have gourds. But they also had turnips, and they seemed to like them. But they would take a large turnip, and they would hollow it out and carve a face on it, and then they'd put a candle in it, and it would become a jack-o'-lantern. Jack is, you know, a form of the name John, and in the British Isles, Jack is a common way of referring to any man.
Like Springheel Jack.
Springheel Jack is an example, or Jack Tar is a famous name for any sailor. A sailor is a tar because they would use tar or, you know, to seal up ships and stuff. So a sailor is sometimes called Jack Tar, or the toy we have, the Jack in the Box that springs up. That's the man in the box that springs up. And you'll hear phrases like every man Jack of them. Because Jack is the John is the most common name for men in English, and so Jack became a nickname for every man in English. And so, if you've carved the turnip into a face like a man, it's a Jack, and it's got a candle in it, so it's like a lantern. And so that's why they're called jack-o'-lanterns. And people would take them at All Saints' Day. They would also be called sometimes soul lights. And they would originally represent like souls in purgatory that need people's prayers. And that's how the kind people would carry them at this time of year. When Halloween and all the Irish immigrants and Scottish immigrants came over to the New World, well, we have pumpkins here. And so the custom got transferred from like carving turnips or gourds into carving a specific type of gourd, a pumpkin. And over time, they've become more elaborate and people, you know, set them out in front of their houses and stuff. But that's the origin of the customs, Lauren.
Mandy, thank you for that question. Lauren, thanks for asking your mom that question. We come to another practical question, this one from Leslie. Jimmy, is serving candy corn a mortal or venial sin?
Well, it depends on whether the person you're serving it to has extremely fragile type 1 diabetes that's not controlled by medication or not. Personally, I like candy corn. I almost never eat it because I almost never eat candy, but I like it. Whether it would be sinful at all is something that will really depend on the situation. And most of the time, it would be venial at most or even not sinful at all.
What about the people who give out carrots to kids?
Well, that's just wrong.
that's just not how we do this. That is the wrong way to do Halloween. Thanks, Leslie. I hope that helps you. This one comes from Ryan. Ryan asks, I hear demons are not able to reveal a person's sins if the person already went to confession. And demons especially hate Latin. Are either of these true?
So one of the classic signs of possession is the manifestation of occult or hidden knowledge. But if you actually read the rite of exorcism, which they don't actually publish, they keep that, on a kind of need to know basis, but that didn't stop me from getting it anyway. it notes that merely having occult or hidden knowledge is not enough, because there are non-demonic ways of learning secret things.
Sure.
That can happen through divine revelation. It could happen psychically. It could happen in other ways. But demons theoretically could know your sins and might reveal them. Like if you're trying to get a demon out of somebody, if you're in the middle of an exorcism, the demons will try to do things to demoralize and, you know, the people performing the exorcism, and they might start spilling the beans on what some of their sins are. It would be great if they're not able to do that, if you've been to confession. And I know people, you know, will go to confession frequently before they participate in an exorcism, but I don't know of any proof that this is the case. So it's a nice thought that demons might not be able to do this, that there's something forbidding them from saying what your sins are. I mean, we're assuming they know what your sins are. They might have just been watching you when you sinned. And they, you know, so that it may be perfectly straightforward how they know your sins. And unless there's some law from God blocking them from saying those words in an exorcism, I don't know of anything that would restrict them from doing so. And I don't know of any such law from God. So it's a nice thought, but I would be skeptical. Do they especially hate Latin? Well, they don't have lips or ears, so they don't especially hate any human language. I would think, though, that if you're exorcising a demon and you're using Latin, it could have an additional effect on the demon, but not because of the Latin itself. It would be because of what the Latin means to you as a person. So if you have an exorcist and to him, Latin is associated with God and liturgy and things like that, and it has a special meaning for the exorcist or for other people participating in the exorcism, then that might add some extra heft to it. Hmm. But it's not because of the Latin. Jesus exorcised demons in Aramaic. Others exorcised them in Greek. If you were, say, a Melkite Christian who has a Greek-speaking church that uses Greek in its liturgical language, then demons might respond better when you use Greek, because to you, Greek is a sacred language. And so I don't think it's going to be because of the nature of the language. Demons aren't really going to care. I mean, Latin wasn't even invented by Christians. It was invented by pagans. So it's not an intrinsic quality of the language that makes it have any special effect. I think it would be the beliefs of the people using the language about the language. If it makes them feel more confident and more in touch with God and sounds more authoritative to their ears, then it might have extra oomph, but it would be because of the people, not because of the language.
Ryan, thank you very much for the question. We continue with weird questions for Halloween for Jimmy. And this one comes from Rob. Rob asks, Catholic apologist Matt Frad does a horror podcast called Sibling Horror. I did not know that. Matt does a very fine Catholic podcast. But this must be a side hustle.
He writes it with his sister.
Ah, very good. Okay, so cool. So Catholic apologist Matt Frad does a horror podcast called Sibling Horror. It can get pretty spooky. My question is, can someone listening or writing such stuff put them in any danger of even an occasion of sin, since it could be entertaining thoughts and scenarios that could lead down a dark path? Or is that something that would change depending on the inclination of the specific individual?
So I've heard some sibling horror. I've even consulted for Matt. I sometimes do plot consulting for friends because I have a mind that kind of analyzes plots and I can come up with ideas that they may want to use. The question as phrased is there any danger of even an occasion of sin? Well, when you put it that way, yeah, because there's always a danger of an occasion of sin. because our minds will generate temptations no matter what we're doing. You know, sitting quietly and praying in church can have a danger of an occasion of sin, because you might become tempted to think about bad stuff and endorse bad stuff with your will. So absolutely everything, because of human fallenness, has some danger of becoming an occasion of sin. But that's something that varies entirely from individual to individual. And for most people, simply listening to something spooky is not going to cause them to commit sin. We are, in fact, wired to find, and this is part of God's plan, we are wired to find spooky stories entertaining. This is part of all drama and literature. In order to find literature interesting, there have to be stakes. There has to be something at risk. There has to be something at hazard. If you're watching something and there's no risk and no danger, there's no excitement, there's no interest in the story. And this has to go to the reason why we find stories interesting in the first place. It's a form of training. If you look at kittens and puppies, they will play fight. You know, it's fun for them. They want to bite and stuff and you know, bat at each other, and they will play fight. And the reason they do that is because it's training them for when they're adults and they may have to handle themselves in real fights. So they're not able to handle themselves in a real fight at this stage. So what they do is they're programmed to train themselves for real fights. They need to find it fun. That's why play fighting is fun, but it also needs to be safe. And so that's the essence of play. It's undertaking a dangerous activity in a safe way as a way of preparing yourself to deal with real dangers. Same, and the same thing is like why humans play games as children, or why we like roller coasters. It's simulated danger, but it's really safe, and that makes it fun. And the same thing is true of horror stories and mystery stories and really any story, but especially ones like, I mean, even Pride and Prejudice, you know, are these two people going to get together or not? Yeah. You know, that's the essence of drama, and horror fiction is simply a particularly acute form of it. But what God does is he's programmed us to find drama and scary things fun to enjoy in a simulated way as a way of helping us process feelings and think about real dangerous situations that we may one day encounter in life so that we'll have some background. It's like, I've never been in danger before. What am I supposed to do? I've never even thought about danger. Well, that's what horror fiction gets us ready for.
I've never even thought about danger. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
All that stuff is, yeah. And
so there's nothing for a normal person. Now, some people are broken in particular ways that will make it not suitable for them. But for a normal, healthy person, there's nothing wrong with horror fiction. Now, it may or may not be your thing, but simply because something involves darkness does not mean it's sinful to read or think about. Because if that were the case, you couldn't read the Bible. The devil makes on-screen appearances in the Bible.
Yeah.
Okay, he tempts people. He tries tempting Jesus. He does all kinds of bad stuff in the Bible. Well, I mean, you look at the book of Revelation from one perspective, there's a big horror element in that book, but it's not sinful to read it. Now, there may be individual people who have a form of weakness that means they shouldn't, but for most people, this is not something we should be scrupulous about.
So, to sum up, after you have watched Jimmy or listened to Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, however you find it, and after you've caught up on all your Catholic Answers stuff, you can go ahead and listen to Matt Fradd. I think that's what Jimmy is saying. I'm just
sibling horror. Yeah,
Jimmy, thanks very much. I hope you have a very happy Halloween.
My pleasure, and happy Halloween to everybody.
And tomorrow, open forum, I believe. Yeah, just plain old straight up open forum. We'll see you then. God willing, and please do drive carefully. I'm going to say it again. There are little people out there. Slow down just a little bit. See you tomorrow, God willing, right here, Catholic Answers Live.